around the football game.
Oh
So
boy.
we'll be hopefully out of here before the highway starts backing up right there. And not that I'm going or anything, but I thought it'd be, when I was looking at a Saturday, I'm like, oh, let me check Air Force schedule. If I do something a Sunday, I'm like, I gotta check the Broncos schedule. People aren't gonna show up. So it's, I know where their loyalties reside in town here. But this is called Optimizing Your Genetics. And actually, after I kind of hit the publish, send to natural grocers for approval, I'm like, I shouldn't have called it that. It's kind of an oxymoron of optimizing genetics because your gene code doesn't change. So it's the constant in the equation of life. And it doesn't matter if you had a horrible background or if you had a great background or what's your circumstance now, that's the one thing you can count on. And that's the thing that's a constant in your health expression. So there's no real way to optimize your genetics. So what I should have said is optimize your genetic expression. And so that's kind of more of the message I want to get to today. Because for some of you didn't know I had a fat guy history here. So this was just a couple weeks ago. I've had dramatic weight loss success. There's some fun apps that I work with my kids, but if I showed up to the workshop looking like that, what would your head be doing?
Might not think you had anything to teach us.
Right. If I look like that, and we're not supposed to judge and all that, but I'm just as guilty as you guys, you may be like, I'm gonna take what this guy says with a grain of salt. You should probably do that anyway, but hopefully I can look the part a little bit more than with that picture up there. Now, what's the constant if I showed up looking like that versus I showed up looking like this?
Your healthy, your lifestyle?
No, if I showed up looking like that, what would you say I needed to change?
Your gene expression.
My gene expression, which is dictated mostly by, or 98% by,
environment.
What you're doing, lifestyle.
Yeah, my lifestyle. So if I showed up looking like that versus what I look like this, the constant in the equation is my DNA code. So if I showed up like that, you wouldn't be like, man, that guy's got rough genetics. Like, we never look that way, but what does our healthcare system say?
It's all about our genes.
Hey, everything's been fine for 50 years. You show up for this test and now your blood pressure's up or your cholesterol's up. We don't know what happened because everything was normal, quote unquote, 50 years prior to this. And now something's arising, so we can't figure it out. So therefore, we're going to easily claim it must be your DNA. And I think that's a huge fallacy. And hopefully, I can destroy those theories behind this today. I'm preaching to the choir. I think I've seen all of you guys here somewhere along my Colorado Springs circuit of speaking here. But I have a couple pet peeves with genetics. You guys have heard of the gun analogy, right? Where your DNA is a loaded gun, your lifestyle is the trigger. I hate that analogy. Whether you're creation, whether you're evolution, it serves no purpose to have a genetic code that's going to promote disease. If we're supposed to be evolving survival of the fittest, why would we have a gene code that would say, let's promote cancer and make your life short? Or why do we have a gene code that says, let's promote Alzheimer's? Why do we have a gene code that expresses heart disease? That serves no purpose whatsoever, whether you're an evolutionist, survival of the fittest, or whether you're a creationist, we're in the image of God. Neither of them makes sense to me from both sides of the story. And so, whenever you hear someone, I mean, there's all these online subreddits, there's podcasts, all stuff. If someone's ever talking about your DNA is a loaded gun and your lifestyle is the trigger, I don't know. That immediately turns me off from listening to the rest of that message because that's such a misnomer. It's not true in my book, and it wouldn't serve any purpose for our longevity and all that. Now, we don't have a gene code to live forever. We have a gene code to live about 120 years, and so we're going to have some decline as we age, but we can still have a great health expression. The other thing I hate hearing is you can turn genes on and you can turn genes off. They equate it to a light switch. And again, I think this is the most, I don't know, I don't want to say stupid or whatever, but yeah, a kind of a stupid analogy. Because your genes, your DNA, expresses based on the information that it's given. So if we step out of here and there's a pack of lions, is your DNA going to express, hey, happy serotonin and fertility and all those types of things? Or is it going to be blood pressure and heart rate and blood sugar? Right. So it's not turning on and off a gene. It's expressing based on what outside circumstance you're giving it. The best analogy I've heard is where your gene code's a blueprint. You can't load a blueprint. You can't pull a trigger on a blueprint. You can't turn a blueprint off. You can't turn a blueprint on. Your blueprint is what it is. If you have a blueprint for a house, if you're going to build a new house in town, what kind of materials do you want to build it out of?
Best.
Stable.
Yeah. You want nice things that are going to last a long time. If you build it with crappy materials and your house blows over with the hailstorms and all that, are you going to blame the blueprint of the house? No, you're going to blame probably the craftsmanship, the materials, all those, but the blueprint is fine. That had to get umpteen million approvals through who knows how many government local agencies before we can even start building upon this thing. So I want you to stop thinking of your blueprint as this potential for weakness or your predisposition or all those things. And look at it for what it is. It's your recipe for greatness and your recipe for success. You have to think, you started as one cell, like one little tiny microscopic cell, half from mom, half from dad, they combined, you started that. Now you are about 70 trillion cells. Did you have any say in that? No. So if there's anything that your gene code does, it's your potential for regeneration, repair, survival, and you keep going. We're the stupid ones that get in the way of that and disrupt those expressions. So from one cell to 70 trillion cells. So I was looking at that. I'm like, how do we quantify that? So I did it perspective in time. So we'll probably be here about 60 minutes today, which would be about 3,600 seconds. So I'm like, 3,600 seconds, that seems like a lot. What if I did 10,000 seconds? So just under 3 hours worth. So if you were to count by ones, if you were to count increasing every second as your kind of metronome value, it would take you 2.7 hours to reach 10,000. Now, what if you wanted to count to a million using every second? That would take you 11 and a half days. So you're not sleeping. You got the metronome going to make sure you got shockers hooked up to you to make sure you're not falling asleep, all these things. You're like, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to count to a billion. A billion would take you 31 years to count to. So if we're 70 trillion cells, how long would it take you to count to a trillion if you used your second as your counting pace? 31,000 years. So that's how exponentially greater a million to a billion to a trillion is. And you went from one cell to trillions of cells in 10 months inside this petri dish we call mom's womb, and you had no say over it. That's how amazing your DNA code is. Again, we get in the way of it. I also thought of it, I'm like, what's our government debt? 20 trillion now? So if we were to pay a dollar every second, it would take 31,000 years times 20. So that's how much money we owe as a government. I can't escape politics. We've got, 40 days left till...
Too long.
Yeah, too long. Let's get the vote going, right? So if the only thing you are programmed to do is regeneration, you have so our whole blood system, red blood cells, it's about a gallon and a half worth of liquid, 20 to 30 trillion cells, they estimate it. You get a whole new system of that every 4 months. So you are reborn red blood cell wise every 4 months. This is why I base a lot of my recommendations initially on a 4-month time span, because I'm like, you've basically created a whole new blood system. So we've tested day one. If we test at 120 days, you're entirely new at that point. So we should see some great changes. If we're not, we know where to kind of alter. So 120 days for entire red blood cells. Your stomach lining. You get a new one every 3 to 4 days. So why would people have chronic ulcers or chronic GERD or chronic those types of things? Right. You get a whole new liver every 150 days. Regenerates. New lungs every 14 to 21 days. Every 10 years, you have a brand new skeleton. And then you have 3 to 4 hearts over a lifetime. That's all in this blueprint. So you're building new houses, new structures constantly throughout your lifetime for 120 years. Why is it those structures decline other than we're not going to live forever? Why are we seeing chronic health problems at 25 years old, 30 years old, 45 years old, 50 years old?
By lifestyle choices?
Yes, it's what we're building it out of. So if we're constantly building a new heart out of pixie sticks opposed to concrete, that heart's gonna not build up, as it so to speak.
So specifically, like on lungs, every 3 weeks, right? They are redone.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that say about asthma? That lasts longer than that.
Well, it tells me. So she asked, if we have new lungs every 3 weeks, why is asthma chronic? Maybe because it's not an actual lung problem. Maybe that's the expression of a different problem.
So it shows up in
Right. Passive
exhalation.
Yeah.
Well, if you're constantly exposed to the same environment,
Yeah, I mean, we're in a different environment. It's how we eat, how we move, how we think. It's our social structures, our spiritual structures, our environmental toxicities, our you name it. Our values, those things are going to influence our building materials going into regenerating and restructuring. But what I'm trying to say is the blueprint's not the problem. It's those things that are the problem. And so if a doctor says, hey, must be a gene thing, get a new doctor immediately. Like, kindly walk out. Great. It's great knowing you, but let me go find someone that's going to look at, and I'll dive deeper into this, kind of the recipe of baking a cake.
So, you know, on TV you see all these ads about having your DNA tested. So it's no benefit to know what your DNA is.
I'm not saying that. Yeah. I'll get to that. Yeah. That'll be kind of what I'll talk towards the end. Do you have something? Okay.
Getting rid of the fly.
Gotcha. So the better analogy I like for DNA is a zipper. A zipper has, you can open it, you can close it. And this is essentially how your DNA is. Depending on what influence coming outside, your DNA will unzip to expose a code for a thing called RNA to come in, copy that piece of the code, take that to the ribosome in the cell. The ribosome builds a protein, and then that protein is most often what we call an enzyme, which is a helper in a chemical reaction. And that enzyme says, with these ingredients, here's my recipe, I'm going to produce this product. So let's say you have relatives at sea level. They come to visit you out here in Colorado Springs, 6,000 feet of elevation. Their body says, hey, this is different. I have a stimulus. I have less oxygen here. Let me unwrap a little bit of the code of that DNA to copy, to build a protein, to build an enzyme, to make more red blood cells so I can survive this elevation. And then the DNA, once those things happen, zips back up to protect it. So a zipper serves a purpose. Let's say I had to go to the bathroom super bad up here. I don't want to stop the workshop. Actually, let me backtrack. Let's say I just had to go super bad, but I couldn't get my zipper down. You guys have had kids. They struggle with that zipper. What happens if they can't get that zipper down and get their pants down? Right. They're still going. So if I'm standing up here and you see my pants getting darker around this area and I start stinking a little bit, you're like, I'm not sticking around. This guy doesn't look like he knows what he's talking about health. We saw the big picture in the beginning and he just wet his pants. Never again is this guy coming back to the store to talk to us. So the zipper served a purpose. Now, I go to the bathroom, unzip, relieve myself, I come back, but I left my fly open. You guys are gonna be distracted. Hopefully one of you is kind and be like, hey, Dr. Kurt, you're a smart guy, but just to let you know, you left your zipper open. And I say, I did that for a purpose. I've got dysentery really bad. I don't wanna waste any time. So when I run to that bathroom, I can go as quickly as possible. So our DNA will zip up to protect and unzip to be exposed in relation to your circumstance of what's going on. This is where that whole light switch on off thing comes into play and I think is stupid. Because it's going to unzip to produce that protein, that enzyme in response to whatever stimulus. And that stimulus is either going to be something that you need immediate protection for, or it's something you can look down the road and say, hey, we're going to grow and repair. Now, a lot of you have heard me go through this. I'll go through it again. If we're in protection, I probably don't even need to write on these things. So let's say if we're in protection, what kind of functions are going to allow us to escape a potential danger immediately? So yeah, so cardiac stuff. So the heart rate, that'll go up. What's blood pressure? What about your respiratory rate? Yeah. What about your potential to clot? Goes up. What about cholesterol? Right. So for 50 years, you've seen the same family doctor. They've done their normal testing. These come back in normal range, which accounts for 95% of the population calling it healthy. You go in, and now some of these things are altered. They're not asking lifestyle questions. They're just looking at numbers and like, hey, these things are out of range. You must have a genetic thing. Then they start asking about your family history. Family history is stupid too, because that's what you grew up in. Maybe you all grew up near Chernobyl. Did anyone like think about that? Or I don't know, maybe your parents fed you whiskey as a baby, who knows? Like, what they're looking for is just the diagnosis that your family had. They're not looking at the things that led up to that diagnosis that your family had. So if we're in protection mode, your DNA unzips so you can produce proteins and enzymes to make sure these things happen. If that DNA does not unzip to allow your blood pressure to go up and heart rate to go up when you're sitting face to face with the lion, what's your chance of survival?
Not good.
So your survival goes down. If it doesn't happen, or where medicine says, hey, you have something genetic, we're going to stop that function, we're going to stop that enzyme or protein, we're going to give you something to knock out your blood pressure, something to thin your blood, and something to lower your cholesterol. Now what's your chance of surviving that lion attack?
It's less.
So now you feel good as the lion's gnawing your arm off. Like, this happened for an intelligent reason. Remember, your DNA is to make you regenerate, repair, and thrive for 120 years, and it'll do whatever it needs to do to keep you surviving the next 30 seconds. If this is happening repeatedly, now we have what? Heart disease? This is all based on a circumstance, and that circumstance is a stimulus that causes you to adapt. And you can break those stimulus that cause you to adapt into two categories. It's either deficiency or it's toxicity. And again, this could be chemical, social, physical, spiritual, emotional, you name it. It's going to be deficiency and toxicity. Your body's going to adapt to it by unwinding that DNA to provide the appropriate adaptations. It basically buys you enough time to escape that stimulus. And your body's going to remember these things. So it could look like something that's happened previously, even though it's not an immediate threat. You can still have that same reaction.
Because you programmed it.
Right, because you're like, hey, I've seen something similar to this before. I needed to do this to escape. So anything that may resemble this type of thing, I'm going to enact just in case. Like I just had the circumstance, like it happened yesterday. My sister-in-law, so my brother passed away in 2009 at the age of 37. When he was on a three-week business trip to China. During the middle part of the trip, he actually called his wife, my sister-in-law, and he's like, for some reason, I feel like I have to tell you this, but just in case, the life insurance policy is in this drawer in this desk. And then 2 weeks later, he comes home in a coffin. So that just in case happened. So she went to the life insurance company and says, hey, the worst thing happened. We have this in place. And they're like, hey, you, in that time, when they started that policy, they moved from Florida back to New York. Somehow a lapse in payment happened and they canceled that life insurance policy. So for these past years, my sister-in-law has been with lawyers to say, and they're trying to, like, they're back and forth. Long story short, around that same time, I was actually personally going through a lawsuit. Someone was suing me for something. Economy was down. They thought, hey, let's get this out. Turns out, a month before we're supposed to go to court, her lawyer quit on her because she knew she was lying, and they were just trying to get a settlement out of me. But the commonality is a deposition in both cases. So I went through a deposition, which was probably the most stressful I've ever been in my life. And so yesterday, my sister-in-law sent an email and says, hey, we're going to deposition. I saw that word deposition. My heart rate instantly went up. It had nothing to do with me. It's not a criminal suit that they're going after. She's on the good, like all this stuff. But just reading that word deposition, my heart rate instantly went up. Because I was been programmed, because I went through that nightmare for 3 years to have it thrown out. So it's like nothing ever happened except for me physiologically and emotionally and all that. Yeah. So that email came across with her, and her subject line was, hey, we're going to deposition. And I was like, okay, not me. Like, calm down, relax, breathe, all this stuff. So your DNA from your nervous system, because your nervous system kind of is what has those memories. It creates a default pathway. It's plastic. It's called neuroplasticity. Says, I've seen this before. To make sure you get through this circumstance, I'm going to enact these types of things. So when we're always in this protection mode, short-term things are survival, long-term these things can be harmful. So this is where they say, hey, there's a gene for heart disease. I'm like, no, that was a gene for adaptation. You're the idiot that's been in this mode of toxicity and deficiency for so long, making sure your DNA keeps expressing this over and over and over again. So we look at cardiac. We could look at, how about brain? If you're running from a bear, are you worried about the Gettysburg Address? No. So memory, concentration, learning, all those things start to decline. And what do we have going on in today's society?
Terrorism.
Yeah, Alzheimer's. Again, there's my side of the family. Dad has Alzheimer's. 70. He just turned 72. Probably the mental capacity of my 9 month to 2 year old, 3 year old. Deficiency toxicities over a lifetime of, you name it. I mean, I would say a big component was he grew up on a fruit farm, so they sprayed pesticides. I mean, that was a big thing. Dinner wasn't dinner if there wasn't potatoes and dessert. So there's a massive sugar load, insulin resistance, didn't move. I could name like a ton of insult, not to blame him, he causing for himself, but when people like go to you like, hey, are you worried about getting it because his dad had it, your dad has it, now it's in your gene code. I'm like, that's not in my gene code. They were expressing one way for so long, the body can't keep up with demand and finally overcomes. We're seeing it in little kids now. ADHD, autism is just on a more accelerated scale at a younger age. And they're trying to blame genetics. Not possible. Autism's increased 1,500% in 20 years. That's one generation. If something's genetic, it should be multiple generation after generation after generation. ADHD's increased 400% in 20 years. When you're looking only at one generation, it's not a gene that's being passed down. So we have to optimize the expression of these things. What else could we look at that have a gene code? How about cancer? Our immune system? Are you worried about catching a cold if you're running from a bear? No. So immune systems go down. One of the first things that functions that would be on the growth side that happens when we go into the protection side is our ability to detox. So we're not getting rid of heavy metals. We're not getting rid of hormones. We're not getting rid of neurotransmitters. We're not getting rid of all these things. And we can go on and extrapolate all these things. It's not your gene that's causing you to do these things. It's your nervous system's adaptation to a stimulus that says, hey, I need a DNA code to make sure I survive the next 30 seconds. We don't recognize it as potentially harmful, and we keep going on with life. Or we look, hey, that's just being inconvenient to me. Let me control the symptom without addressing the root problem, and I can keep going that way. So how this all works, do you guys bake? Do you have a recipe that's been handed down from generation to generation? Yeah. So imagine, so when your DNA produces that protein to do that whatever reaction you need, there's two parts to the equation. There's what we call substrate. So these are your ingredients if you're going to bake a cake. The protein or the enzyme that you just created, that's your DNA, so that's your recipe. So you may have the recipe from 10,000 years ago as it's been passed down. So that's the constant in the equation. It depends on what ingredients you're using to then form a product. So you have, it's not going to show up on the TV. So let's say you have your enzyme and substrate one and two, say that's eggs and flours, go into the enzyme, the recipe to produce what? What does flour and eggs together produce? I'm not a baker. So kind of a batter, right? Probably a really crappy batter. And then you're going to use that product, so part of that product, to add, now you have some seasoning and spices, so you're creating two more ingredients with a different part of the recipe to create a product. And so in the body, a lot of these products then happen to become the ingredient in the next reaction. And then that produces the product. And that product now becomes the ingredient in that. And this happens trillions of times per second. How long will it take to count to a trillion?
36,000.
Yeah, 31,000 years. So this is happening trillions of times per second inside each one of your 70 trillion cells without you figuring out how to do it. That's the code in your DNA. That's the greatness in your DNA. Now, let's say you have a family tradition. Here's the recipe, and you're getting ready for like this big family reunion, and you're the youngest in the family. You're the most newlywed, and that's the tradition, that the newlywed has to make this world-famous family cake. And you're like, we just got married. We're on a tight budget. To do all these ingredients would be way past our budget, so you're gonna skimp on your ingredients. What happens to that cake?
Skimp or fail.
Right. It comes out bad. It may pass to you, maybe your spouse, because they're being nice to you, but You bring it to grandma, and what's she going to say? This is horrible. Annul this marriage right away. She can't cook. Like, all this. So you're like, all right, back to the drawing board. I'll use all the ingredients, which just caused you more time, caused you more money to get to the better final product. And that's what we see. That's what I see a lot of people. People are trying to skimp. They're doing a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit here. And they finally come to me after seeing doctor after doctor and say, all right, like, I've wasted a lot of time, wasted a lot of money. It's amazing how much money people have spent before they even come to see me. And I'm like, where's that gotten you? And they're like, nowhere. I'm like, okay, so let's not skimp. Let's get back to these reactions. It all comes down to this, and this is kind of tough to see, but actually, let me go back. One of the biggest ingredients I see missing, actually, let me backtrack even before. All these ingredients you're already familiar with, a vitamin. All a vitamin is an ingredient in those reactions. A vitamin serves no other purpose than to make sure it's the right ingredient for that recipe. And then, so you have the right vitamins, you have the right recipe, the right enzyme, and now you have the right product to then create more. And then you're gonna have other vitamins that come in to help that next reaction. And then other vitamins, minerals also serve that same purpose. So it's really simple. Get the right vitamins, get the right minerals, get the right amino acids. One of the biggest ingredients I see either deficient or what I'd probably say is more insufficient with today's lifestyle is B12. It's the most complex vitamin we have. Humans cannot produce it, so we have to consume it. This is why I'm not a fan of a vegan diet. And most vegetarians, I would say, are in that same standpoint, because it's not going to be a plant source nutrient. This is where red meat is, in my opinion, essential for human expression. Now, we can supplement around it, and I do that in addition to eating red meat. So what I don't want you to do is come back and say, or leave today, like tune me out the rest of the day and leave and be like, I'm just going to load up on B12 alone. Because remember, there's a bunch of vitamins and a bunch of minerals that work cohesively together. None of these reactions are one nutrient in isolation to drive the next one. Why I pick on B12 is because every single one of our cells uses it, and it goes into feeding our top two chemical reactions in our body. One is what we call producing ATP, so our oxidation reduction. And then the other is called methylation. And what this chart shows, this is a lot of what we call the methylation pathways. And this is, I just taught last week a 3-hour seminar on this to midwives, and I scratched the surface. So I'm not going to get too heavy and too deep into this today, but hopefully to give you a little bit of kind of insight into it and how to support the genes and optimize your genetic expression. Kind of hard to see, but you see all these circles and you see these purple bubbles, right? These purple bubbles are different enzymes. So these are the different recipes to drive the reactions inside the body. Must not like the screen. So let's do it this way. So this bubble, or this cycle here, that's how we utilize folic acid. This circle here is how we utilize B12. So folic acid will be one of those ingredients to then go into the cycle of how we utilize B12. And then from there, B12 will produce other things. You guys have heard of SAMe? Why have you heard of that one?
For muscles, I mean for joints.
For brain.
Yeah, it's kind of like the happy hormone supplement, those types of things. That goes into producing SAMe, which then is going to help break down histamine. So these are just different scenarios that happen. So if people are always having like allergic reactions or skin problems and all that, it could be a methylation problem. Could be a B12 deficiency, could be a folate deficiency, could be whatever.
I've heard of methylation, but I've forgotten what does it mean.
Yeah, good question. So methylation, I'm just going to stand up here. Methylation, in the literal sense, is the donation of a carbon and three hydrogen atom. So if you guys remember back to chemistry, you have a carbon and there's four spots around it. A methyl group has three hydrogens, so there's one spot left open. And so that goes on to attach to different molecules and functions. So when your DNA uncoils to read that code, it's those methylation donors that come and recoil back up. So methylation protects your DNA like an aardvark, like it coils up so things can't come in and protect it. So let's say we don't have enough methyl factors. DNA can't coil up, and if it's loosey-goosey, that's more potential attack coming in from free radicals and oxidative damage and reactive oxygen species, all those types of things. So there's where we can have potential cancers because, hey, we're going to attack this DNA code and interrupt the replication, whether it's too much replication or wrong code, those types of things. Think of how a virus works. A virus tries to inject its DNA material into your DNA material to replicate. So as we're getting into faux flu season coming up here, if we don't have enough methylation, then you're an easier attack point of that virus trying to come into your DNA to do that. So that's kind of like the first role of methylation to protect your DNA. Other roles, like in these pathways, so if you have folic acid, you have to eventually add a methyl group to form this active form, 5-methyltetrahydrofolate, which is the active form of folic acid. So folic acid is not very usable. It has to go through a bunch of these conversion processes, which then you have a methyl version. B12, so cyanocobalamin, which you usually see in supplements, has to be converted to methylcobalamin, which is the most active form of it.
So when you're seeing the MTHFR genetic mutation, is that a true mutation or is it typically a deficiency toxicity issue?
I'm going to get to that. Okay. So yeah, she's asking about MTHFR. I don't know if you guys have heard of that. I'm not swearing at you. I'm not insulting you. if you look at the letters, so it's right here. It's one of these bubbles. So it's one of the enzymes that help convert folic acid to the active form of folate. Methylation also, sure.
Oh, no, if you take a B complex, say 50 of all of it, do you still have to take additional B12?
Maybe.
A certain amount?
Maybe. That's where I usually look at labs.
Okay.
Because, yes, that's what I say. I'm seeing a lot. Maybe you may not be B12 deficient, but I'm spotting a lot of insufficiency. So you got just enough to kind of keep things going, but maybe not enough to supply all of these processes. And so if there's not enough to supply, then your body will play triage like, hey, I'm going to use it for this reaction, which may not be enough for over here. And if that's insufficient for a long enough time, then that could arise some sort of specific physical complaint or ailment or whatever. Now, other pathways, it's coming down to produce glutathione. You guys have heard of glutathione? Your body's number one antioxidant. So that's going to go help protect your DNA as well. That's going to combat free radicals. But glutathione has a major component in your liver detox pathways. So don't just think our toxic environment coming through to us. We have to detox our hormones. So I'll see a lot of hormone and problems, say estrogen dominance, not so much, hey, you're just unlucky club, you don't have enough progesterone. It's more, you're not breaking down estrogen enough. Instead, you're breaking down to a smaller molecule, which can be more potent, which recirculates, kind of doing more damage. And so traditional medicine will say, hey, that's too much estrogen. So instead of asking why there's too much there, let's just give you more progesterone. So now you're like way overloaded on both hormones. Methylation, all these things will come down to produce sulfates. You heard of chondroitin sulfate. What do those things help support?
Joints.
So methylation is going to help protect your joints. It's going to come through and aid in your vitamin D receptor. So you may have adequate vitamin D levels, but ultimately that vitamin D has to bind to the DNA. And so methylation helps to basically protect the vitamin D receptor. We talked about fight or flight. So those things that raise your heart rate and blood pressure and all those things, epinephrine, norepinephrine, dopamine, we have to be able to break those down. If we're not breaking those down because we don't have enough methylation factors, then we can stay in that heightened position for longer than normal. So you get cut off in traffic and you're still steaming about it 3 hours later. That's a clue to me, not just a personality thing, but there may be a biochemical thing that we're not supporting the pathway to break those down enough. Like I said, it can get very complicated.
It seems like a lot of what you're saying is the balance of all those to have to be together to work.
Right. You need a balance. And I'm probably getting way off topic here, but let's say we have this folic acid cycle here. What happened in the mid-1980s to all our food? We started fortifying everything with folic acid. Well, that can actually create a functional B12 deficiency. And B12 goes to every single cell in our body, especially neurological type stuff. One of the things that we've seen since we started fortifying folic acid is an exponential rise in autism. Not saying that's a direct cause, but there's a correlation of things. As a chiropractor, often people get complaints with sciatic type stuff. Well, guess what creates and supports that sheath around each nerve? B12. So again, going to this whole, so I mean, I'm picking on B12 itself, and I don't want, like I said, I don't want you to run out of here and go buy all the B12 off the shelves or go get B12 injections, because A, don't ever do it in isolation, because like you said, there's got to be a combination and balance of other nutrients coming in and out. But just to give you an idea, it's not often this DNA code that's the problem, it's the ingredients going into it. Now, there can be problems with the DNA code. Doesn't necessarily mean you're screwed though. Let me see, what did I have next? Okay. So the birthday girl Maya brought up, did you guys catch that it's her birthday today? She brought up this vulgar five-letter initial MTHFR. What that enzyme does is helps you convert folic acid to the active form. And it's probably the most popular one out there, but again, you have 20,000 genes coding for all these things. This is just a thimble size full of what's going on, but that one gets the most publicity. And it can be a MTHFR, because if there's disruption in this cycle, you're not going to produce B12 as it needs to, because that needs that cofactor. You may not produce your neurotransmitters as you need. You may not produce vitamin D receptors. So it can block up that whole thing. So it could either just be overloaded. So let's say that's supposed to convert everything to an active state, but we're fortifying everything with folic acid. That just may be too much influx of that one nutrient. And that's a roadblock. Like, hey, I can't handle all of this. So what can happen is folic acid is just a string of glutamate molecules. You guys heard of glutamate? Mm-hmm. Under normal balanced conditions, that helps with memory and learning. When you have too much glutamate, your brain gets excited. And then as neurons get excited, they break apart, and what's inside spills into the outside, and we create an inflammation. So we create an inflammatory condition in the brain, and they're tying a lot of things like Parkinson's, ALS, Alzheimer's to too much glutamate in the brain. You could argue the same thing with autism in kids. So there could be just an overload of, based on ingredients, of going into MTHFR. And you'll see this all the time. We hear coconut oil is good, so we're going to load everything up with coconut oil. We hear that, I mentioned B12, great. We're going to slam B12 into everything I can possibly do. Too much of a thing is not always a good thing either. So we could just have an overload, or we could actually have what they call a mutation, or more specifically, a SNP. And that stands for single nucleotide polymorphism. So I equate that more to a typo in the DNA code. So one little code is switched around, but depending on your external circumstances, if you've read any of my stuff, you've probably spotted a number of typos. If you're calm and relaxed around it, you read through it and you're like, oh, I know what he was trying to get to. But if music's blaring and there's hail and there's kids crying and all that, you may get hung up on that typo and you're like, I'm just gonna put this down for now until I can relax and go through that normal reaction. So more and more, we're discovering these typos, and that's just because in 2003, we finally discovered and mapped out the whole DNA code for the human body. So it's pretty new that people can have disruption in this MTHFR. But you can have disruption in any of these things. MTR, MTRR, how you utilize B12, your VDR, how you utilize vitamin D. ACAT over here. So if you're breaking down sugar to pyruvate to acetyl-CoA, that should enter the Krebs cycle to ultimately produce ATP. If there's a block there, instead it'll produce more cholesterol. So we wonder why cholesterol levels keep going up. So the point is, MTHFR, these are just kind of what it would look like on test. So you asked about, hey, there's these commercials for genetic testing. The one I actually like and kind of recommend to some people is 23andMe. And what you can do with that is you spit in a vial and then you send it to them and they map out, hey, you're 20% Neanderthal or you're 15% Southeast Asian. You're like, I'm like, white as can be. How can I be Asian? Like, or whatever it is. But they've mapped out your 20,000 genes, and then there's other sites out there that will take that raw data and then convert it into these SNPs. So a lot of this is confusing, but you see MTHFR. So this person, the actual patient of mine, has one of, or has a few of them. So this plus plus means that enzyme is slowed down. What most people think is, hey, if I have a mutation there, it doesn't work at all. That's not true. It just means it's slowed. So for this person, this A129C right here, she has a plus plus, so that enzyme only works 60% essentially. So it's 40% slower than someone that doesn't have that. So she has to do it a little bit differently. Other ones, MTRR. So her body has difficulty processing vitamin B12. MAO, this is how you break down serotonin and dopamine. So if you can't break down dopamine, dopamine's like your car accelerator. So if you can't break that down, you're gonna be like kind of aggressive, all those things a lot of times. So with this person, not utilizing folic acid very well, can't process B12 very well, this would be the last person I'd ever recommend doing a vegetarian diet. I'm like, you're gonna kill somebody if you don't eat meat. So there's where some diet things can be specific. And I've had some hard conversations with vegan people and vegetarians and be like, look, this is, we're either gonna load up all of this supplement wise or we can start eating a little bit differently, and that's their choice, but I have to have that conversation with some people. So yes, you can look at your DNA code. The cool thing is this person actually did this just more out of curiosity's sake. I had already ran some other labs on her, did some recommendations based on it. What's interesting is she was having a lot of joint stuff, family history of it and all that. So if she's not processing folic acid, not processing B12, that pathway's not going to come down to support the joints. This was actually way after the fact of her starting a treatment plan. She's like, I'm just kind of curious. They don't have kids yet, but she's like, what would our kids, kind of where would we need to support them a little bit differently? And so when we did this, we're like, oh, that would explain why you express XYZ. But even though she has these potential defects, it doesn't mean it has to be your destiny. You can support around it. We're getting smart enough now. If you can't process folic acid, then let's not load you up on that. Let's do 5-methyl tetrahydrofolate instead. Let's bypass that enzyme that's only working 40% to get to that next step. Great, we can't process cyanocobalamin. Let's do methyl B12 to bypass that, and then those will come down. So when I'm looking at somebody, they're coming in, they're like, I have these things. What I want to look at is, okay, what's at the root of this thing? And lifestyle is going to be the number one, toxicity deficiency, but sometimes it's these SNPs. A lot of times it's poor methylation. And so it's getting deeper and more individualized because we're not basing on symptoms, we're basing on what's, basically you're individual. Like what's happening at a cell level, at a DNA level, at a systems level, opposed to a symptom level. So questions for me?
I've heard of the word methylation when you're, like, you want to buy a vitamin, mm-hmm. and you're comparing two different kinds, and one is methylated versus one that's not. Am I correct in that?
Yep.
I mean, why aren't, if methylation is such a good thing, why aren't all the vitamins in the active methylated form?
If methylation is such a good thing, why aren't all companies doing that? It goes back to that baking the cake. They're like, hey, I want to use cheap ingredients. So to get a more active form is probably going to cost more raw material-wise to put into their product. So
how would I, as a non-informed consumer, know whether one vitamin B12 is methylated versus this next one I'm comparing
to, right? Yeah, the labels show, and kind of a lot of them will have that methyl word before what it is. Okay. So like,
you wanna look for that?
Yeah, for example, like say B12, it may list B12, but then in parentheses you may see cyanocobalamin, which is a synthetic version of it. It may say methylcobalamin, which is the methylated version. It may say hydroxycobalamin. It may say adenocobalamin. So there's different forms. I would say adeno and methyl are the two better forms.
So no matter what the vitamin is, you're going to look for the word methyl? Or
that's a safe way to do it, yeah. Okay. It's not always like, say B6 will be pyridoxine, but the active will be pyridoxine 5-phosphate. So, yeah, so that's...
But somewhere in the bottle, it should hopefully find the prefix methyl, I mean, or...
At least for folic acid and B12, you'll see those two. Okay. Yeah.
Isn't it true you don't want to load up on any one, like, vitamin so much because your body has different receptors, and if you load up on... only, you know, B12 or B6, then the other vitamins won't be used?
Yeah, that's why I'm not a fan of nutrients in isolation, unless the whole system is supported. Now, once I get kind of the basic system supported, I may introduce a single, like, going back. So say you have folic acid B12. I use a product in office that has both those active form plus active B6, but also some cysteine. So a little bit more of those coming down the pathway. Intrinsic factor, which helps you absorb B12, because that's one of the reasons I think we're not, or we are insufficient. Because if we're in protection mode, digestion's going out the window. And with all our gut problems, that's going out the window. That's where it gets absorbed. So those types of things. So let's say I have that supported, and they're still like, say they're over in this area, they're not breaking down dopamine well enough. I may add a little bit extra B6 by itself, but that's in addition to what I've already kind of done.
There's a balance then, not just load up online.
Yeah. Like for me personally, my supplement, personal supplement regime, it's to support the system. That's what I do. Like, so I'm taking, I don't know if I probably added up 2,000 to 2,500 milligrams of B12, methyl B12, but I'm also supporting the system here. I'm adding some SAMe to make sure I've got enough donor. Like, it goes, yeah. But I've done that based on lab testing of me personally. And I mean, I grew up a sick kid, so that was, I'm still in this recovery process, so to speak.
But someone else that maybe isn't, like Joy said, she's taking like, is it like a 50 complex or something of all? Is that safer than just isolating some bees if you're taking 50 of them all, supposing everything's working within her, the methylation
pathway? Blood tests would show that though.
Yeah, that's kind of always been my default is like, let's run labs while you're doing that. If these come back okay, great, we're supported. If not, then here's probably where I would add a little bit more type of thing. And again, not all products are created equal. I have my personal favorites and personal brands that I've worked with long enough, so I know kind of how people are gonna respond to them and things. But yeah, that's where it always gets down to, I don't wanna guess, let's test. And that could be a different test for, so to speak, like someone email like, hey, do you test for B12? I'm like, rarely do I do that. And they're like, why is that? I'm like, well, because B12 in blood will be that cobalamin, the inactive version. That doesn't necessarily take into account, are you converting it into these forms? But when I look at the CBC, so your red blood cells, look at homocysteine. So if you guys want to, like, you guys probably all know your cholesterol numbers, but how many know your homocysteine number? That's the one thing, because if homocysteine here, so folic acid B12 should convert to that. If that's high, we know that's not being supported. So I can interpret homocysteine levels, CBC, some of your liver enzymes. Usually we're saying, hey, they're high, but I'm seeing a lot of them being low, and those are B6 dependent enzymes. So I know, okay, we know to load it, like, so yeah, it'll be based on that, and that's going to be all circumstantial. And
so I see a cardiologist, but he has never run a homocysteine.
A cardiologist who's never done a homocysteine?
Yeah, and is it because insurance won't, I mean,
yes. I'm totally blanking on the guy's name. He was a Harvard MD, and in the 60s, he discovered homocysteine. And Harvard then commissioned him to say, develop a drug that will lower homocysteine. And no matter what drug he used, it always raised homocysteine. He's like, the only thing that's coming back to lower this are these B vitamins. He got kicked out of Harvard and basically blackballed for 20 or 30 years because he couldn't create a pharmaceutical to do that. And so since there's no drug to lower homocysteine, guess what gets missed on, yeah. Where cholesterol is like, hey, we got all these things that can alter this level. We can capitalize, we can proprietize, yeah.
What is the recommendation for low homocysteine? I mean, if I ask my doctor, can I have this wrong, and it comes back low,
it's supposed to be low.
Pardon?
It's supposed to be low.
Well,
or high, whatever it is.
There's a range for it.
Yeah.
Because being too low,
yeah,
it could be just about as high. But like a normal lab will go up to 15. I flag it over 8. Because homocysteine, why it's so damaging is it breaks down the blood-brain barrier. So what your nervous system, your brain, your spinal cord, your fluid, all that, what it should keep out, the higher homocysteine is, the more that's going to allow that to be inside that nervous system and those pathways, creating damage and inflammation and all those things. So if you were to PubMed homocysteine, you'd come up with hundreds upon hundreds of different diseases associated with elevated levels. The two biggest ones are going to be cardiac, which is ridiculous why a cardiologist doesn't test for that. And two will be cognitive stuff. So Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, all those types of things.
I wonder if the, I mean, because I've had more than one cardiologist.
Yeah.
And I've never had that level one. So I wonder if maybe the AMA, I mean, maybe they don't recommend, I mean, I don't know.
Well, usually cardiologists are contracted with insurance companies. And insurance companies have a set protocol. This is what we're going to cover. So they're practicing based on what insurance is going to cover, not necessarily what's best for the patient. That's why I don't contract with insurance companies, because like...
You don't want to be told what you can treat your patient.
Yeah, because it's... I'm not looking to please the insurance company. I'm looking to please the... I want them... If they don't get results, they fire me. So...
Where does CRP... What's C-reactive protein? Where does that figure in here?
CRP can also be an inflammatory marker. But it's, how do I say it? It's a rule in test, but not a rule out test. So let's say CRP is low. So meaning, hey, we don't have an inflammatory reaction. That doesn't necessarily mean you don't have inflammation going on in the body. Because it's a certain type of inflammation, but doesn't encompass kind of all types of it. So you could still be have inflammation going on. That's why I do a homocysteine with a CRP. Because the CRP could be a good range, could be low, but your homocysteine could be off the charts. And I've seen that quite a bit.
So you do this in your office?
Yeah. I mean, I don't draw the blood. I have a co-op with LabCorp, but I order up what I want.
Great job. No deposition.
No deposition.
How much does that 23andMe run? Do you know?
I think it's $199. Yeah. I just actually set up a link with them. I don't get any kickbacks or anything, but if you go 23andMe.com/, I think it's just Dr. Perkins, Dr. Perkins, I think you get 10% off of that. So that would save, what, $20?
Just less than
$200. Dr. Perkins, no, Dr. Me.
Yeah, doc, they use my last name.
Okay.
And then once people get those results, I'll have them loaded up into another site that helps interpret it called mthfrsupport.com. And I think they charge $30, but that takes your 20,000 genes, which would be 11,000 pages worth of data. And then they get your SNPs here and with that.
So does it mostly measure the MTHFR?
Well, that's one. I mean, that's one in a bunch of them, because there could be,
it measures other stuff.
Like all those bubbles can be potential hangups for people. Like this one, GAD, which converts glutamine to GABA. So GABA, think of your like relaxing and enjoyment and all that. I'm seeing quite a bit of blocks here. And people are like, why can't I sleep? And we're like, well, you got a block there. So it's not converting there and instead shuttling back up to producing dopamine. So actually, instead of going to sleep, you're putting your foot on the gas pedal. So you're tired and wired.
So that one DNA test will cover all that.
Yeah, that'll give all those data.
I was just going to say, anywhere where there's supposed to be an enzyme function in the body where it's supposed to be doing something, if you have too much or too little of something, that'll be your rate limiting step. So it may not be a problem with the enzyme itself, but if there's too much or too little of a substance to make it run smoothly, you either get a backlog or you get a, you know, something going on. It's kind of, that's a simple explanation of how that works.
And usually I don't start off with that. It's, we usually go to this part where people are like, all right, we're doing everything and there's still a hang up. Or like, hey, I'm doing everything right and still not getting results. Then usually I'll go to this and be like, okay, here's where some missing ingredients. But I would say 9.5 out of 10 times I can look at labs, specifically like blood labs, or what I like a lot is organic acid labs, to look at where's the blocks in there, and we'll treat according to based on those things and your history and lifestyle and all that. If we get down the road and you've been diligent, you're doing everything right, we're still hung up, then that would probably be my next step, is let's look at that more specifically.